End-of-life decisions are best made long before they're needed, when they can be discussed with family members and loved ones. Ruth Peterson is a chaplain with Pacific Health Ministry who's made it her mission to educate people about advanced directives. She talked with my co-host, Chris Vandercook, about their critical importance.
Well, I believe it is incredibly important because devastating injury and illness can happen at any time. Mm-hmm. And advanced healthcare directives are not just for 80 and 90 and 100-year-olds. Mm-hmm. They're for 30 and 40 and 20-year-olds and everyone in between. And it's a way to make sure that your wishes and needs are met when you are no longer able to speak for yourself.
In the event of a catastrophic injury that might, say, be leave you brain dead, something like that?
Yes, or in any other ways where your brain just might not be able to make your vocal cords work, and you're not able to communicate with the doctors what kind of medical care you wish to receive, if any, mm-hmm. for how much, for how long.
In what kind of areas, what are some of the areas that this breaks down into, an advanced directive?
Well, the advanced directive usually speaks about what type of pain management you would want. It talks about whether you wish to be on a breathing machine or a feeding tube, if you want to die at home or if you want to die at the hospital, if you want your family to know everything that is happening or if that is something private that you wish to keep. And most importantly, it designates what is called a healthcare advocate. An important point to make is that an advanced directive is different from a living will, which we used to talk about a lot.
Yeah.
Because a living will, by and large, is not, in my understanding, in the state of Hawaii, legally binding. Uh-huh. But an advanced healthcare directive is something that is legally binding and that the healthcare institutions will respect and honor.
Now, that's not a distinction that many people understand. I certainly never heard of that before.
No, and we use the terms interchangeably. I myself have used the terms interchangeably. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to something this important, it's important that we use the right terms.
So an advanced directive is an official state document? Or?
It is an official state document. It looks like this.
Okay. Hawaii Advanced Healthcare Directive. Now, you got this online?
You can get it online. You can go to your doctor's office. Any of them would have them. You mm-hmm. can print it off of any number of websites. Kakua Mau usually has these available, which is a good website for people who are starting to look. And this does not have to be notarized. It can just be witnessed, and it is legal and binding. And once you complete it, you place it in your doctor's files. Perhaps you have it on file with the hospital that you're likely to go to, but you keep a copy. Mm-hmm. Your loved ones have copies. Your medical representative has a copy, so that
Ruth,
when it comes.
I'm going to just sort of walk you through it by categories. I'm sure you're very familiar with these, but healthcare power of attorney is part one, designation of agent. That makes sense. And then part two is individual instructions broken down into end-of-life decisions. Things like, I want to stop or withhold medical treatment that would prolong my life. Pretty intense kind of thinking called for
to deal with
these questions.
It is. And there's another legal document that is also very intense and very intimidating.
Uh-huh.
It's called a PULSED, or Provider Order for Life-Sustaining Treatment.
Uh-huh.
It's, as you see, the Advanced Healthcare Directive is multi-page. This is one page.
Yeah.
And this is for people who have been diagnosed with a serious illness, perhaps within the last year of their life.
Mm-hmm.
It's typically on bright green paper. You stick it to the refrigerator so that when the ambulance workers come, they can take it with them. You should also, though, give a copy to your mandated advocate.
This has a category, for example, do not attempt attempt resuscitation, CPR. Do not attempt resuscitation.
Exactly.
CPR.
And this, unlike the advanced healthcare directive, the PULSED needs to be filled out in the presence of your doctor and signed by your doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it is legal in that
signature
way.
Signature of provider.
Exactly. But before you get to these documents, which can be overwhelming and intimidating.
That's kind of where you come in, is before you fill these out, right?
Exactly. There are some tools that are very useful to get you to the point where you're able to answer these in an easy way.
Right.
There are a couple out there that I like, and some people prefer using one, some people prefer using the other.
Uh-huh.
The first one is something called the Conversation Project.
Uh-huh.
And again, you can go online. It's a free form. It's pretty when you print it out. And it is a tool that you can use to sit with your family, your loved ones, those who will have to make those decisions for you. And it has questions like, finish the sentence. What matters to me at the end of life is...
Uh-huh.
And then there's a space for you to put it down. But there are also prompts. As a patient, I would like to know on one end only the facts and on the other end all the details,
mm-hmm.
or somewhere in between. So if you sit with your loved ones and you go through this, as I have with my loved ones,
mm-hmm.
it helps get a sense of what really is important so that when you go to the more concrete legal forms, it makes it much easier. The other tool that a lot of people use is called Five Wishes.
Mm-hmm.
That also can be found on the internet, can be found through Kukua Mau. Of course, there's a $5 charge for Five Wishes, and the Conversation Project is free.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just which you find easier to use.
Mm-hmm. The whole idea of dealing with questions, asking yourself questions like this, involves going to, as we said, it's a very, very troubling place, and as we've gone over some of these things that you're asked to consider again and again, it comes back to me that you would be post a catastrophe, you'd be in no position to make these decisions.
Yes.
You're just in no shape to decide any of those things. Do it when you're, you know,
when you're feeling good and clear-headed, right. And when you have time to go and talk with people.
Exactly.
Studies show that between the years, the New England Journal of Medicine posted a study between 2000 and 2006 of almost 4,000 deaths in one area of the country.
Mm-hmm.
They considered that representative of all the deaths in the United States mm-hmm. that year. Almost 45% of the people who died were unable to speak for themselves, and yet decisions had to be made
wow.
at their bedside. The worst possible place to try to make these decisions is when an accident has happened.
Mm-hmm.
It was over 30 years ago in my own family, and one of my father's aunties had been living alone, completely healthy, relatively young, only in her 80s,
mm-hmm.
and she was found unresponsive in her home. And when we arrived at the ICU, the doctor came in and explained the situation, explained that she was not likely to recover, and said, so you need to tell us what you want us to do. I'll be back in 15 minutes for your answer. And never having discussed that, we were left to say, well, what do we think Auntie would want? And if we had talked with her before about this,
mm-hmm.
we wouldn't have to say, what do we think? We would be able to say, well, I know that Auntie or Uncle or Mom or my sister wants this and does not want that.
Well, it's an enormous comfort to those left behind to be able to say, we talked about this.
And then people that I've talked with have come to me and said, this has been such a gift because my mother right now is able to talk with me because we have a great ability to have a conversation. But there's a point where she can no longer talk to me, but we have this as a foundation upon which to build mm-hmm. what we will do in her last days.
Now, Ruth, you're a chaplain, so tell me what your work is here. How do you come in?
Well, I'm a chaplain with Pacific Health Ministry, and I'm mm-hmm. currently serving at Pohainani Good Samaritan Society in Kaneohe.
Mm-hmm.
Pacific Health Ministry has been around. We're celebrating our 30th anniversary.
Uh-huh.
And we employ about 20 staff chaplains in over 20 facilities around the state on three different islands.
Mm-hmm.
All of us have different areas in which we work. Majority are in hospitals. If you have been hospitalized in the last 30 years in any of the hospitals in the state, odds are you have met
one of you folks.
A Pacific Health Ministry chaplain. Our role as chaplain is not to tell the patients what they think or what they should do. They have a lot of people willing to do that.
Our role, probably more than enough.
Probably more than enough. Our role as chaplains is to listen, to help bring forth from them, to be able to speak, perhaps for the first time, their own values and beliefs, what they hold important, and then help them give voice to that in an atmosphere that can be very daunting and hard to live with.
That was Chris Vandercook talking with Ruth M. Peterson. She's a chaplain with Pacific Health Ministry who has served at Good Samaritan Society Pohainani for the last 5 years. Monday is National Healthcare Decisions Day. You can learn more on our Facebook page.